are listening to We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio. Welcome to the latest edition of the Thomas Merton Center Show, a program that highlights the ideas and activities of members of a unique peace and social justice organization in Western Pennsylvania. My name is John Hare, and today we're talking with activists from the Merton Center Anti-War Committee, Ron Reed and Reverend Paul Dordal. Ron and Reverend Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you, John.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the Anti-War Committee of the Thomas Merton Center? Ron, let's start with you.
Okay. So my name is Ron Reed. I'm a law student at the University of Pittsburgh, but I'm also an activist with the Thomas Merton Center. I interned there for the past year, and I work primarily on the Anti-War Committee, and that's my main focus. Yeah.
Reverend Paul?
I joined the Anti-War Committee about a year and a half ago. I'm a chaplain at the Veterans Administration Hospital here in Pittsburgh, and also a member of the Veterans for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a great journey working with the Thomas Merton Center and their long history of peace and justice work, and we have a lot of work ahead of us.
So, war and the possibility of nuclear annihilation have always been a problem, at least in my lifetime, and I'm now in my, would you believe, my second 50 years. War and the possibility of nuclear annihilation have been a problem, and now, after the November elections, we're in a new political environment as well. What is the discussions at the Anti-War Committee of the Thomas Merton Center, and what are you focusing on?
So right now, we're starting a campaign around nuclear abolitionment because we're seriously concerned about this issue. And also, we received a donation from a group that said, you know, work on this issue specifically because we care a lot about it. And that sort of kicked us off. And we have a couple members who have been working on the issue in and out for the past 30 years, I'd say. But right now, we have some time on our hands, so we want to make this a big part of our kind of program. And Paul, do you want to?
Yeah, the Thomas Merton Center, well known because of its anti-nuclear work. Of course, Molly Rush, the founder, was part of the Plowshares 8. And they went to a facility and poured blood on nuclear warheads. And
with the Berrigan brothers.
That's right, the Berrigan brothers and others. And so they've been doing this for a very long time. But currently we have a very dire situation with an incoming president who wants to increase the amount of nuclear warheads and nuclear capabilities. And something that we have been trying to work on reducing now looks like we're going in the other direction. So the imperative now is stronger than ever, and it's a scary time. And so we're hoping other people will join us in this work, and I know other people are frightened by the possibilities of increased nuclear war in our world, and so we're hoping that others will hear our call and come join us at the Thomas Merton Center as we work to increase the possibility that we can reduce our nuclear warheads. Not only that, abolish them completely from this earth.
Last year we had Joe Schlesinger, I believe, from the group that had met internationally working with other countries for a sort of a cease in terms of any further expansion of nuclear weapons in the world, and there was considerable international discussion. Now, I would imagine that there's a new concern, both nationally and internationally, about whether or not we may be able to further reduce, because then the issue was, are we going to be able to further reduce the amount of nuclear weapons? There had been a start with the U.S.-Russian treaty and so on, but now it looks like we're entering into a more dangerous situation where the leading nuclear arsenal in the world, the United States, has elected a person that wants to expand, not reduce, nuclear weapons.
Yeah, if I could comment a little bit, is just we recently had a vote in the UN to begin negotiations about bending nuclear weaponry around the world, abolitionment, but the United States voted no, and I mean that's a signal for what's coming ahead. Even, you know, if we're not going to be serious now, whenever Trump's elected, what's going to happen? So it's very troubling. An international solution has always been looked to with things like disarmament, with landmines, chemical weaponry, things like that. But with nuclear weapons especially, it's important. I don't know if that's possible with this issue. I think it's going to take people here in Pittsburgh and around the country standing up and saying, we want the end of this weaponry, period.
Is this an issue with veterans, Reverend Paul?
It is. Veterans for Peace has already put out a statement about the possibility of the incoming president going back on the commitments made by the United States in the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which calls for the complete abolition of nuclear arms. So Veterans for Peace is already beginning to come out on this issue strongly again. Our director, Executive Director Michael McPherson, is going to be coming to Pittsburgh on April 21st. He'll be speaking here in Pittsburgh about that issue. And so this is going to become a real focal point for us in this coming year and beyond.
What sort of discussions has the committee had in terms of organizing priorities or program priorities locally?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to recognize that we're kind of distanced from the discussions in terms of, you know, this is going to take, you know, efforts on the part of Washington, D.C. and discussions in New York with the UN headquartered and things like that. But what can we do in Pittsburgh? That's the question. And I think we have to look locally. I think we have to look at the banks that are involved in financing nuclear weaponry in terms of the defense contractors they're invested in financially, as well as the business deals they have with defense contractors like Lockheed Martin and Boeing and such and such. So that's one pressure point that I think people here in Pittsburgh can focus on. And that's what the priority that I'm going to put towards my activism, my organizing, is that, you know, we have these local actors that are in the wrong. And we may have a small voice on the international stage, but we have a voice on the local stage, and we're going to exercise it. So.
Yeah, we've worked in the past year. We've been working doing activism with PNC Bank, for instance, and their support of various actors who are in the nuclear business. Also, Carnegie Mellon University and their actions involved in militarization of drones and things of that nature. So we've been very active, even in the last year, trying to bring local attention to the cost of war right here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think that's been a good thing about our committee is that people on our committee have allowed us to really broaden the scope of what we do to explore the issues in Pittsburgh that are connected to war, because it might seem distant in some people's minds, but I always tell people it's right down the street, whether it's Carnegie Mellon University, which Vice News did a study of the 100 militarized universities. Carnegie Mellon was 27th on the list, I believe. And I mean, that's a significant thing when we talk about military funding going to these colleges, or we talk about the banks, you know, fueling these defense contractors and the promotion of arms and submarines and military grade weaponry around the world. Or we talk about local politicians that either support war or aggressions towards other countries. I mean, it's right here. You just got to look for it. So, yeah.
So how large is the committee and how does it function at the center?
Right now, we have about 15 active members who attend monthly meetings. One of the very encouraging actions that are taking place now is a thing we're calling the Peace Roundtable, which has been organized by the Thomas Merton Center to bring other groups in. And currently, we have between 10 and 12 other groups working with us in what we're calling the Peace Roundtable, which we'll be meeting again at the end of this month.
That might include like religious groups, I'm imagining the Quakers or the Friends, or and other, what other kind of groups would be involved in that?
Yeah, we're trying to broaden the scope really in terms of, you know, making it interfaith as well as inner just issue. I mean, yeah, we have the Quakers are part of the gang, I think, they don't mind me saying, but there's other religious organizations that have, you know, churches that have committees set up around peace. And then there's also like different kind of groups that deal in divestment of, you know, Israel or things like that. And there's traditional just peace groups, Veterans for Peace as a member, you know. I don't want to name all the group members because I don't know if they'll feel comfortable us disclosing that.
Sure.
But yeah, we have a pretty broad group and we're trying to keep it where we have peace as the focus, but also we want to share the connection, like we're saying, to the community. How war saps all this money out of housing, for example, or how war saps all this money out of education, or how these wars for oil are destroying the climate. I mean, these things are very real. I think it's just our community needs to kind of accept it. It's very difficult because when you're stuck in these silos and you're working on your issue, there's a tendency to be like, well, that's my issue. I work on, you know, education, or I work on making sure my air is clean. What do I care about war? Well, it's time to start caring about war because it's so connected. And it's one of those linchpin issues that connects all these issues together. So yeah, that's the focus of the roundtable.
This is the Thomas Merton Center show on We Are Pittsburgh. We'll be back after this break and continue the discussion of war and nuclear weapons with Merton Center Anti-War Committee activist Ron Reed, Reverend Paul Dornan. We'll be right back after these messages.
Bring those jobs back home, Donald Trump bellowed to those greed-headed corporate executives who have hauled our middle-class jobs out of country. Or I'll slap you with a big tariff when you try to sell your foreign-made products here. Great stuff, Donnie. And to prove you mean business, I know just the CEO you should target first. Her name is Ivanka. Yes, your daughter. Her multimillion-dollar line of clothing, sold through major national retailers ranging from Macy's to Amazon, are pitched to America's working women. Yet, practically all of her products are made on the cheap in low-wage factories in China, Indonesia, Vietnam, anywhere except America. Imagine the message it would send to runaway corporations and the integrity it would establish for the Donald if he slapped his first tariffs on Ivanka's goods. But neither Daddy Trump nor the daughter want to discuss the embarrassing conflict between his political bluster and her ethic of runaway capitalism. Instead, she's tried to dodge the issue by saying it doesn't matter since she'll, quote, separate herself from the business if she becomes a White House advisor. Nice try, Ivanka, but the stench of hypocrisy will only grow nastier if you're at your father's side while he castigates and punishes other corporations that have absconded from America. The only way to salvage even an iota of moral virtue is to repatriate the manufacturing of your brand-name apparel. And bringing those middle-class jobs home to the good old U.S. of A. would also make a powerful political statement. But no. Showing that money trumps both political savvy and the morality of simply doing what's right, Ivanka says her corporate brand will stay offshore. As a spokeswoman put it, "We want to make responsible business decisions." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Really? How does that make America great again?"
You're listening to We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio, and this is the Thomas Merton Center Show. I'm John Hare. Our guests are activist Ron Reed and the Reverend Paul Dordal. We are talking about the issue that actually formed the Merton Center many years ago, the issue of war and peace, why we need to continue to spend so much of our time and energy in the dangerous and expensive efforts of war and defense. So it's a big question. First off, let's talk about our nation and its expenditures on military and defense. Can you contribute to an understanding about the nature of that, how large it is, what its effect has on the rest of our society?
Sure. One of the actions that we were involved with last year and will continue to be involved with is the Global Day of Action Against Military Spending, which really brings to light how much money the United States is spending on the military. And as Ron was talking about before, the intersectionality of all of these issues, these justice issues, clearly when a nation is spending a half a trillion dollars a year just on military expenditures, not on all those indirect expenditures, which could amount to almost $1 trillion a year. If 10% of those dollars were reallocated towards some of the greater needs of the population of this country, wonderful things could be happening. Poverty could be reduced, health care could be provided, education could be provided for so many people. But we continue in this country to spend outrageous and exorbitant amounts of money on the military without anything really to show for it.
Well, it hasn't stopped wars,
right.
which continue to plague our nation, as well as not just our own wars, but our proxy wars that happen. But the last time that I looked at the portion of our budget that can be attributed to military spending, it was, if you take away Social Security, which is an insurance program and a separate trust fund, we are talking half of the expenditures of our federal government go in one way or another towards military spending. That's 50 cents out of every dollar, at least. Perhaps it's more. I haven't seen current figures, but
Well, when you factor in the cost to care for veterans afterwards, it even goes higher.
Right.
Higher. So this is, and it's not just a budget that is paid for by taxes. Incredible amounts of borrowing have to happen to meet that budget expense. So the country is going bankrupt trying to engage in wars that have had no positive effect at all.
And despite the best intentions of many people in the country, it seems as if our country by far is the leading expenditor of military expenditures and military equipment, bombs, and armaments of war by far. Our military budget far exceeds the next 12 nations in the country, their military budgets altogether. So somehow the mantle of protector, military general of the world and protector of all seemed to have been assumed by our country, and that's the burden our citizens bear, seems as if.
Yeah, and I think this is a good way to talk about another part of our intersectionality discussion, is that when we talk about all this military spending, what is it really? It's a giveaway to these private corporations that profit from war, and all that $500 billion, I mean, that's rooted somewhere. You look at the lobbying these companies do, whether it's Lockheed Martin or Boeing or General Dynamics, as well as the banks that profit from these wars, when they lobby Congress and they spend all this money, they get a benefit from the projects that these companies get. So it actually makes investing sense to invest in war in a sick way. So until we decide that we've had enough as a society, this will continue.
Each year, one of our partner organizations, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, they do a thing called the penny pull at various events where several pennies are put out for people to put into where they would want their tax dollars to go to. And invariably, everyday people rarely ever put money into the military slot, because they understand the needs of education and health care and all of these. So the American citizenry is overwhelmingly opposed to this kind of spending, yet nothing seems to move in this area.
Okay, so the question is posed to peace activists. Isn't this a dangerous world? Don't we need to defend our society and our the freedoms that we have and the accomplishments we've made? Why shouldn't we have a strong defense to protect our citizens?
Well, I guess the counterargument to that is, it really keeping us safe? Do terrorist acts still not happen? And do we not see we're invading countries all the time, or we have military personnel stationed in all these countries? Does it make us any more safer in reality? Or is it just a way to control these other countries? That's what I put
to you. I'm going to speak personally now as a veteran who spent 13 years in the United States Army, and having been to Iraq and seen the devastation of war. And to make it very personal, myself and many other veterans, we are very angry because of wars that have no purpose and have no end and serve no one. And cause great amount of destruction and death. So I don't see us as the world's protector anymore. I see us as potentially the world's destroyer in our military activity. And that has to be made known to us. And a lot of veterans feel this way. From the Vietnam War all the way up to these last wars, our veteran population has been very disillusioned with what we were sent over to do. There's a sense of being bamboozled, and now we have to stand up and say, okay, no more of this.
The committee, I understand, has had outreach to local churches and church groups, and you've had some discussions, I think both positive and sometimes frustrating. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, they've been very interesting. So me and Paul, I mean, we come from religious backgrounds, and we had this idea that maybe these are, you know, reaching out to religious people would be a way to, you know, improve the membership of the committee, as well as just create general awareness. These people would be receptive to our ideas. But what we found in going to a variety of churches, from Anglican to Mennonite to Presbyterian, Lutheran, there's definitely a bizarre passivity amongst churches to the war issue, and at times of open support, very nationalistic, I guess you'd say, Paul.
Sure.
That's very, I wouldn't say off-putting to some, but it surprised me. And one of the things, I mean, me and Paul, we went to go talk to a pastor, I won't say where, But it was at a larger church, and he told us this very bizarre thing about how our God is a violent God, and that he is brutal, and we at times must be brutal as well. That always struck a chord with me. There was another pastor who said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar, and that people will be called to do what they want to do. And I was just taken aback, because you expect these so-called moral leaders to be like, no, we have to fight for peace and, you know, do as, you know, Jesus called us to do, but you don't get that all the time. And it's stuff we have to work on as a community, because I think these churches are, they reflect our society, a society that doesn't care about imperialism or about the effects that we cause around the world.
As a pastor and a chaplain for the last 20 years, I've seen this throughout the church. Some great churches, Mennonite Brethren, United Church of Christ, other churches that are really pro-peace and nonviolent activists, but still another stream, very powerful stream of religious groups, even one of mine as a Catholic priest, that is troubling, that there's an idea that there's a potential for just war. And I'm encouraged today, though, because there is a movement to put to rest this idea that there's such a thing as just war, there is no just war. And I'm encouraged that Pope Francis is considering changing the Roman Catholic standpoint on war and to become a peace church as well, along with many other churches that have already declared themselves to be peace churches.
Well, the theory of just war is based, I think, on St. Augustine's criteria that he set for what is a just war, what isn't a just war. Actually, I think that criteria would condemn almost every military action today if you really took it seriously. One of the things is the protection of civilians from injury. One is strangely, the potential for victory or not victory, things like that. But it is interesting to me to hear that there is a movement to question whether there is or can be a just war. And
yeah, the group that got together in the Vatican last year came up with an alternative to just war theory, and they call it just peace theory or just peacemaking. And they also have 7 criteria on how to do this. And so Pope Francis has that on his desk, and hopefully we'll be making a statement soon about where the church is going.
And I would presume that a just peace theory does not say, oh, we do not need to have laws, we do not need to enforce laws of society, that there is behavior that needs to be sanctioned by under social values and social norms. It's not like saying, oh, we will all stand there when something wrong is being done to one of our brothers or sisters, does it?
Yeah, just peace does not mean that there isn't going to be a time when communities have to band together to protect themselves from an evil force. Of course, there are instances where that's important. But I think what's troubling today is that there's independent groups making decisions under the auspices of others. For instance, the United States often unilaterally bombs nations. Currently, they're bombing 7 different nations outside of any authority. So just peace would call that to question, say, how do we understand what is a justifiable authority to engage in violence?
Well, these are very pregnant subjects for discussion, and I'm sure the committee always has interest and work before it to make sure that these discussions are had. What can people that are interested in working with the Thomas Merton Center Anti-War Committee, what can they do? How can they make that connection?
Well, I think the first place is if you're really interested in our work, I mean, we have an email address. It's awc@thomasmertoncenter.org. You can email us and find out how to get more involved. We also have meetings that are usually at the end of every month. I think it's the last Saturday at 11 p.m. at Thomas Merton Center. But this month we'll be having our meeting on Sunday at 1 p.m. at Thomas Merton Center. We encourage you to come down and help us out because we have a lot of work we need to do.
And you can check out the Merton Center Anti-War Committee. I think there's an article in this month's New People by the Anti-War Committee. And And folks can check the website for the Thomas Merton Center and actually hear this show if they wish, as well as learn how the context for the various committees, including the anti-war committee. Ron and Reverend Paul, thank you so much for being on the Merton Center show. You've been listening to the Thomas Merton Center show on We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio. Become a member. Subscribe to our monthly publication, The New People. Go to www.thomasmertoncenter.org or call us at 412-361-3022. I'm John Hare. Thanks for listening.